You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. I always try to play guest-appropriate music, and both our guests, Hail from the Great... Well, I should say hail. One hails from the great state of Texas.
And one resides.
One resides. So does somebody have higher standing in the Texas, in the law of Texas? Josh, you lived there earlier. Is there some kind of code to see...
Who's well, whoever has a driver's license and an address wins.
Okay.
I still have a driver's license.
Oh, Texas driver's license?
I mean, it's expired, but I still have one in my wallet.
He didn't say it had to be current. He just said had one.
That's got to be current.
All right.
You got to pay taxes. Do you pay taxes in Texas?
State income. Wait, that's ridiculous. There's no state income tax in Texas.
Hey, I don't make the rules, man. See, that's just it.
You're making up God and nonsensical rules.
Let me tell you, that's exactly the problem. He does make the rules, and that's one thing, as Josh found out, you should not let happen. So, Josh Goldberg, here at Boulder Crest Retreats, he joins us today, and as well as the man, the myth, the legend himself, Michael Musselman, joins us from Granbury, Texas. So, boys, first of all, thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Of course.
What so talk about your Josh drove home on Friday, and I was Friday night. I was exhausted.
Oh, absolutely, I was wiped out.
Yeah, and Mike and I staggered into the hotel and like see you later. I got to go to bed. How'd you get home? Did you crash? Sideswipe anybody? What happened?
I didn't. You know, I was grateful that I had a few people who I talked to on the phone, my folks and a few others, because it was. Yeah, you know, that helped me stay alert and engaged. Listen to a couple podcasts, and then the last hour I had to put on some pretty hardcore hip hop music to keep my my energy level at the right place. But I made it. I have to say that I dreaded the idea that I was gonna have to get my car and drive for 5.5 hours. But it was nice to, and I also listened to one of the recordings we did of the presentation, which. Was I didn't really need to do that because it was definitely in my head, in my brain, in my heart. But it was a nice experience. And then I had 50 deer on the last 10 miles that I was able to avoid having one of those because I figured I was going to get an accident the last 10 miles. That was my guess, but I didn't. I'm here.
That is the way it tends to work all the time. Mike, how about you? How did you get home? When did you get home?
I got in about. I think like two, well, no, what time is it? I don't remember, man. Two, and then got on the freeway, and it was nice because, you know, you're like back home, I get in my truck, I drive out, you know, you jump on the 183, take that through Fort Worth, and then it's just like, all of a sudden, boom, you're in the country, and there's the cattle, and you're like, yeah, okay, this is it.
Oh, nothing bad happened?
No, it was a pretty uneventful trip home. I got home like at 4, and boy, I came in the house and I was wiped out. I mean, I think I went to bed like at 7:30, and then I slept until like, because I had to get up real early in the morning. I mean, I got up at 0:30 and headed out for another trip. So. But a couple cups of coffee and I was fine.
Yeah, I did. My flight left at 5:22, so I was up at like 3:30, 3:45, something like that. And then, I was all packed and I take off. I stopped to get gas in the rental car and I can't open the gas tank. And I'm like, how do you open this thing? Now I look for an owner's manual. It's not in there, so I said. I said, screw it. So it's not going to get filled. So I turned it into a lockbox. And then I think both of you guys know the story of get off the plane in Charlotte. And, you know, there's messages on my phone. I start flipping through them. And one's an email from a staff sergeant who's standing OED who, I mean, and just cool things that happened on Saturday. So you've done this all week, and the essence of the email is I have a Marine with me, and he's really struggling with some trauma in his life. I remember from the class, go to the website. We're sitting here looking at the two goals and eight commandments, and we're talking about it. He feels better. Could you give us a call? And I called him, and I think, Mike, you talked to him too?
Yeah, I talked to both of them. I talked to the staff sergeant, and I talked to Rodney.
Right. And so so it was like, when it works, this is what it looks like, except it doesn't happen like this very often. And
No, it's usually the other end. Yeah,
it's just like, oh, what? Oh, yeah, that? Yeah, I didn't think of that. And so so it was pretty cool. And then I got an email from General Furness, and he said, I just went to the gym, and I got stopped the entire time I was there. And it was funny because he's, you know, on the interview I just did, he said, okay, I go to the gym, and nobody even looks at me, let alone talks to me, okay? And but during the week, people started to say hi to me. And he said, hey, this is cool. People are saying hi to me now. They know who I am. And based on, you know, the speaking that he did in front of the Marines of the division. And but he said on Saturday, he said, the whole time I was there, Marines were coming up to me. And I was like, wow. But I was talking to Rudy, a friend of ours. I was talking to Rudy when I was walking through the Phoenix airport. I took off my coat, put it down. I look, my flight's boarding. And I walked off and left my beautiful blue hooded toggle coat, my favorite coat. So.
Well, I'm glad that coat is kind of South California, and you're good without it.
No,
get a Carhartt or something.
Come on. I'm not a Texan guy. I'd be a poser. Yeah, rolling around Southern California in Carhartt. Really? Really, dude? Are you okay? You guys have both have had a chance to think once you got home. Because we joke around a lot, but last week was a lot in a lot of different ways. Yeah. And give me a couple thoughts, Josh.
Yeah, you know, we had used the term in some of our AARs at night, as Gunnar had said, like overwhelming. And I think, it was overwhelming in terms of the volume of what we were doing and the lack of sleep and the stuff. But I think, like, as I reflect on that, the word I would say is clarifying. And, you know, for quite some time, certainly the last 5 years, we've been working on, like, what is the world that needs to get created to address these issues writ large, not just in the military or the Marine Corps. And the amount of clarity that came from having to have thoughtful and nuanced and subtle discussions, for example, about, you know, what kind of guidance would you offer someone who wanted to go to mental health and go to their therapist. And I think, you know, for me, and before I left, I had this thought, I was like, I need to write something that is, what does mental health look like in the 21st century? And I feel like we started to map that out in profound ways, and not just for the Marine Corps or DOD or veterans, but for the world, is this is how it ought to look like. And so that to me has been immensely clarifying. And the other thing is, I learned a ton from the two of you and General Furness, and certainly, you know, a lot of people came up, but we spent, we were the average of the five people we spent the most time with, and it was you, Gunner, and Furness. And I learned so much from you guys. And as I said to Mac, you know, Ken and I, Ken Falk and I, who's the guy I partner with, the retired Master Chief, we talk and think about this stuff all the time. And we don't meet anybody, and haven't met anybody who does the same. And this isn't a slight on you, Gunner, because I know you spend a lot of time thinking about it. But I don't know that I've met anybody who I would say is like, oh, they're in the same league in terms of thinking about this and having to talk about it in a way that's not just like, the system sucks, you know, but is actually constructive and be like, this is what needs to happen. And that, what I learned from the two of you and from General Furness, is why I've had trouble going to sleep and staying asleep, because I keep sending emails to myself with new thoughts and ideas I have for, oh, I want to do this, or this is a better way to describe this or explain this. And I think that piece was so monumental, was the learning that I was able to do by being forced to have to think about how do we want to articulate this stuff in the most efficient way possible. And as Einstein said, you know, if you don't understand something well enough if you can't explain it simply. I think that's what we were forced to do over the course of that, what I'd say is like the post-traumatic winning boot camp that we went through.
Mike, would you get out of boot camp?
That was so long ago. I remember. Looking back, I got nothing really out of boot camp. But what kind of came to me, and so, you know, I had Josh's book, and I got to the airport a couple hours early, and I was reading it, and I was writing stuff down. I was writing in the margins. I was circling stuff, underlining stuff, highlighting stuff. And by the time I landed, I had read the whole book. And I had it, you know, it's all marked up. It's got stuff on there. And it just kind of that's a good word. It clarified for me the understanding that, you know, it was funny because as the Marines come up, they're like, I learned a lot from you. You spoke to me. I'm glad that we're sharing. I'm not alone in this. And it was just like the same comments. But the biggest thing that, that really hit me was how much I had learned about not only myself, but, you know, what I needed to do to maintain. So the learning I learned, you know, in that week, I probably learned, you know, freaking 10, 20 years of wisdom of myself and, what I need to keep doing and how do I need to do it. And, you know, so like I said, reading the book, things were just jumping out at me, and it was just making so much sense. I mean, it was just really a kind of a great experience because, you know, there was no confusion. Everything was just crystal clear. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I do what Josh is doing. I have a Samsung Note 8, and I have, like, you know, all these notes. Like, I'll pop the pen out and I'll just write, like, I'll think of, for instance, you know, there's things that I describe, but what happened was worse. And I don't go into that. And I don't mean gory details. I mean, like, in a helicopter crash, nobody in my command even came out to see what happened. No, if you could imagine that, a helicopter crashes inside a Marine position. He's one of your companies, and nobody goes out to even see the Marines. And I remember I was pissed, right? Like, not the CO, not the Sergeant Major, not the XO, not the OPSO, not the LOGO. Nobody came out. And I was like, what the hell, man? What the hell? And so, I mean, so you start thinking about, you know, about how do you make it more powerful? You know, and so I have all these notes to myself, and then I hadn't had a time to read a lot of those the correspondence. I'd see them because we were so busy. I mean, the day would start for me at 6, and then I'd record an hour of the radio show, and then I'd save that, and then we'd meet in the lobby. We'd go to Helen's for breakfast. We'd leave Helen's. We'd go get ready for the show, and to start, and then when you get there. You know that we're tweaking a few things. Somebody wants to come up and talk to you, and then it starts, and we do that, and then people stay after. You talk to them. You maybe have an hour. You know, people come up to talk to you even then, and then, you know, I was trying to post stuff to the website so that stuff would get on so people could listen, and then the second one, and then we normally would finish around 5:15, and we'd hop in the car and we'd go do the third one for the day. And we did that, you know, day after day after day. So I didn't get a chance to read some of the emails. So I'm on the plane, and I'm reading the emails, and I was blown away by that. You know, when you see an email, and a spouse says, use the word life-changing event. I mean, how many times have either one of you used that phrase in your life? I mean, it's something you don't see.
And Matt, in a positive sense, right?
Yes.
You know, the real traumas are like, but in a positive, like the antidote to trauma is the positive life-changing event.
Right. And then there's an email from the Sergeant Major 10th Marines. It's like an 8-paragraph email. And he's, you know, using terms like the best PME I've ever been I've ever attended in my time in the Marine Corps. Now, Mike can tell you, Sergeant Majors don't give out compliments very often. Yay or nay?
Yeah, no, you're right.
And so you, I was reading those things, and it's, and honestly, try not to get emotional, because this is rooted in the trauma of my family. It's rooted in trauma of things that happened in the Marine Corps. And you're seeing this thing begin to happen that you envisioned, and I don't want to use the word overwhelming. I mean, so for me, it's affirming and unbelievable that this thing has begun to roll a little bit, and hopefully will continue. And I'll tell you, the other really exciting thing to me that was in my head was Mike and I had – Josh had left, and we had dinner Friday night with the commanding officer of 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines. And he's a fan of All Marine Radio. It was really cool. After dinner, Mike had left to go home to talk to his wife on the phone, and then he gave me a ride home. So we get in his truck, and he turns it on, and I hop in, and all of a sudden I hear my voice. He's listening to All Marine Radio. And I'm like, this is awesome. This is awesome. I should turn that shit off, man. I don't like my own voice. But, you know, he was talking about Josh that you know, 2-8's going to use that triangle form, and that's going to be a part of our counseling. Whether the division does anything with it or not, I don't know. And it's on Friday night. He said, but we are. And I thought, how exciting, because that is the tool. You know, I can talk about the commandments. Mike can talk how it applies to you. But Josh's role is showing them this is the tool. This is the way you stay between the left and right lateral limit and live the life you want to live. And, I mean, to me, that's a transformational thing. And all that stuff in my head. And I came back home, and I came in here, and I sat down, and I started working. Until I got tired, then I had to go down. But it wasn't until maybe 6 o'clock at night that I said I gotta lay down. I'm gonna kill myself. But anyway, but it's very cool, very cool. Is there any thoughts that either one of you guys, Mike, is there any thought that you have relative to it that stands out any more than the rest?
No, you know I talked to a lot of my buddies that were present there, you know, so I talked to Katie, the email that you got, that was Katie. I talked to Zeb, you know, we talked on the phone for a while, and the same thing, you know, it was kind of eye opener for him. And, you know, I talked to a lot of those guys, a lot of the battalion commanders, because they're all my buddies, and, the same thing, same resounding thing. And then some of my buddies that were not there, but got the word through, you know, that same chain, just a little bit different people, you know, they're like, hey, heard you were in Lejeune, and, you know, John told me that this, and, you know, that's pretty awesome, and, you know, so there was a lot of connection outside that. I mean, hell, even to the point where I got home, and Jared came over, not shortly after I came over, he's the police officer that was served in 2-8, you know, so I gave him the challenge coins that Tom had given me to give to him, and he was like, dude, you know me, people called me, you know, that were still in 2-8 and I was there, and they're like, hey, man, do you know this Mike Musselman guy? And he's like, yeah, I know him. He works at the police department. Why? Well, he's here, man, and he's the shit they're talking about, you know, so it was just funny. I mean, it wouldn't stop.
How about you, Josh? Anything that stands out? And one of the cool things for Mike and I was kind of hanging out with Josh and seeing, you know, seeing this through his eyes, because he would haul off and say something, you know, like, you know, because his eyeballs are different than our eyeballs. And anything for you, Josh, that stands out for more than anything else?
Well, I'll say two things. And it's funny because I got back and I didn't get home till like after midnight on Friday night. Then I had to be up at 6:30 to go and meet with somebody because we're trying to expand our programming. And I had to alter. She must have thought I was manic because I'm like start talking to her. She was an Army colonel, social worker. So we're talking about all this stuff, and I'm like, oh, you got to come to my office. And I'm on the whiteboard. And we went toe to toe in a good way. But I'm like, she must think I'm nuts. And then I had a 3-hour call on Sunday as well. And like, so this cool is that I've had catalyzing situations since I've been back. I had a call with a VA researcher this morning. So stuff that was already planned that just seems like more fuel for the cause. But the main thing I've been thinking about are metaphors and analogies that are the right way and most effective way to communicate some of this stuff. And you guys, you know, when we talk about the capacity to self-regulate and the notion that we will have reactions to things and what do you do if but more importantly, left of those, what do you do to, if trauma finds all of us, it will darken our doorstep, how do you create practices in your life? The same way I think of that the Marines are training at Lejeune because they will go to war. That is the purpose of the Marine Corps. The same way, how do you train for that inevitable stuff that will come up? And what's the right analogy? So that's what I've been going through in my head about, like, okay, well, our system's designed to, you know, metabolize stress. One of the things that trauma is it causes a lot of stress. Stress is stored in the body. What does that look like? Because I do my football analogy, but I'm like, oh, there's a better way to do this. And football is not controversial. So I'm like, all right, well, you know, is this like a beaker that fills up and then you can bring it? So anyway, that's the stuff that I've been thinking a lot about. And the other part that's cool to me is, you know, I'm on record and I will say it till the end of time. You know, resilience is to me, it's a lot because resilience is bouncing back, which, like we talked a lot about, assumes that life is this straight line, this flat line that you get knocked off on if you have trauma and you want to get back. It's like the safe harbor kind of flat line. And we know that's false. And what we really want to build is resistance in people so that when trauma comes into their life, they are the what can withstand the storm. They're the strong ship or the strong thing that can withstand the storm. And doesn't mean that they don't have emotional reactions and get upset. It just means they're the person who maintains a clear head at all times, which so much to me is the defining attribute of a warrior, which is somebody who can bring order to chaos or make sense of chaos. And at some point during the week early, you guys were telling me this story, and I think I don't know nothing about this guy who built a house in Florida who had reinforced it well past what the code had said. And during the hurricane that hit down there, every other house around him was completely obliterated. And his house had a couple of dings on it. And I found the picture of it and started reading about it. And I'm like, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, like, in a world of snowflakes, and who are people who, when little things go wrong, it's like a whole hurricane hits their house and destroys it because it's not a well-built house. Is you can be that house, that safe harbor, that other people can come to and find strength in. And that was like, oh my God, like that random detail that one of you guys, I think it was Mac, you talked about it. So I'm like, that's going in there because that's the whole point of this is how do you be that, and build that level of strength that can withstand, you know, the category 5 storm. And so that's what I've been thinking about is the right metaphor that everyone's like shaking their heads. They're like, ah, got it. Now I know what the visual is. I know what I want it to look like. And that makes sense. So your point, like, and that's why I love the two of you is, James Stockton talks about the relentless strive for self-improvement is, you know, we could have done the same talk 12 times. We didn't. I mean, I was redesigning slides during the break of the 12th talk. Like, we weren't done until we were done and we weren't satisfied that what we were doing is right. And even when we got done with all 12, I mean, I listened to myself on the way home so I could critique myself because I know I can do better. And, anyway, so that was like that hunger for better. Is what I think y'all sharing, Tom.
We're eating breakfast on Friday morning at Helen's, right? I'm getting the usual. And and so I told Mike, I said, hey, you got to get a picture of your family in there. And Mike was like, at first, no. And then he did it, and very graciously. And then, you know, we needed pictures of the Hanoi Hilton because we talked about it, Admiral Stockdale. But Josh looks at me and says, we can't change this stuff at the last minute. I said, shut up, Josh. We can't do it. And Mike said, shut up, Josh. Just do it. And then we did it. And it worked because Friday was awesome. And the thing Friday morning was awesome. But, you know, those are powerful ways that you chunk information and make something visual. General, I'll tell you, you know, who was great at it was General Mattis. You know, things like guardian angels, no better friends, no worse enemies. He asked people, hey, I'm looking for phrases that chunk information. And because they get embedded in the brain, you know, and that's to me, hopefully what, you know, lands with a thud and needs no salesman is going to be. Yeah. Post-traumatic winning. Yeah. I know that. And so, so that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
And one other thing, Mac, I didn't hear a response to it, but I thought you should have a new theme song for Post-Traumatic Winning, which is the DJ Khaled song, All I Do Is Win, Win, Win. I'm like, how is that not the right song?
Let me see if I can find it. Well, I'll have to give it a listen. All right, I'll have to. Is it a good tune? Is it?
It's a great tune. It's like in the start of it, like let's just say this is for the stage. I'm not saying change your radio play in song, but I'm saying like to start it. It's like the song is like it has a great start, and then it like the bass drop, and then it's like all I do is win, no matter what. And then there's, you know, it's a rap song, so there's stuff about money, and it's got Ludacris in it. It's, you know, DJ Khaled always does his collaboration, so it is an excellent song. And people, and then it's like, put your hands up and let him stay there. And so, it's, you know, I would think it would motivate the crowd.
All right. I will certainly take it under advisement. You just said a word that I was going to mention. But one of the things I've always loved about my friends, and it was really cool that Josh got to meet our friends, you know, Lieutenant Colonel Groh over at CLB 25, General Furness.
24.
24, I'm sorry. And see the way we had a very nuanced conversation about the line. And so we're talking, and I think Josh said, okay, so he's drawing this line in the air. And I said, no, it's not a line. It's not a line. It's got to be this wave, because if you say that life's a line, then you accept that, and that's what you're going to work from. But if you say it's a wave, then there's already trauma and adversity built into the wave. And look, I don't know about you guys, but that's my life. And so I have always loved, you know, with my friends, those kind of deep conversations about the nuances of something. And that's one of the things I love about collaboration with people and loved about this week. And it was awesome. Here's something from Montana Man. You and Furness fucked up my entire day this morning. Just turned on the show to see what comments you had about last week. Dave came on. Now I'm almost 2 hours behind. Awesome shit! Exclamation mark. So, go ahead. Mike, I interrupted you. I apologize. You were going to say something.
No, I didn't say anything. I just don't agree. Rap. I don't like rap.
So. Oh, rap music.
Yeah.
You know. What was so cool about that Furness stuff was I came back. And I was talking to Ken, and I was like, you know, and I wrote, I gave a copy of our book, and I put a description there, and I was like, you know, Ken, I always talk about how important it is, like that so much of this struggle and mental health stuff, the leadership challenge. And we talked about, like, what would it be? How do you create these leaders? And I'm like, I met one. I was like, Ken, I met one who is, like, the ultimate warrior and man who is, like, complete and nuanced and thoughtful and strong and, you know, you'd want to hang out with him and you'd want to go to war with him. And it's like, and it was super, super cool to get to meet these people who you guys had talked about. And then they are who you said they were. So Joe and Brock and Tom and Furness. So it's like, that was amazing. But then when you sent me the interview and I'm like, holy cow. And I was able to share it with Ken and then able to share it. We shared it with our full board and our honorary board. So, like, because it so captured who he is and how he is and how thoughtful he is. And you as well. But that was the cool part where I was like, I promise I didn't make it up. It wasn't, you know, I didn't get sold the bill of goods. But like, this is an incredible leader. And it's not just one. It's like lots. And then talking to General Headland, and it was like, wow, like, he gets it too. And this notion that, you know, we spend more money than we've ever spent in this country, in the military, in the VA on mental health, for more programs, and yet all of the problems that we're trying to fix are getting worse. And in no world, right? And I always talk about Ken being EOD with this motto of initial success or total failure. You don't get a lot of second chances to make a mistake when it comes to issues of mental health or issues of IED, because the damage done can be catastrophic, if not fatal. And so, I think was the core frustration I heard again and again from the command was like, we've outsourced this stuff. It doesn't seem to be working. And there's got to be a better way, not just to do something differently, but also to really augment and figure out the rightful place of these programs and specialists in that continuum. And that was the whole first aid analogy. That was like, to me, it was like genius. It's like, that's the right way this should be done. that ties in with this work that this guy, Dr. Vikram Patel, has done in India and Zimbabwe and Rwanda, where you don't have a lot of mental health professionals. And that's what I mean about the clarifying thing. And if you're listening, you can hear, like, everything I've ever thought about or read is all connected. There's no, like, gap of, like, A equals C, what the hell is B? It's all, like, you know, A equals, you know, it all ladders up.
Email. It was interesting to hear you guys throughout last week and your voices as you continue to experience it, I would describe as profound. My question this morning is, in retrospect, is there anything that surprised you? Gunner?
Anything that surprised us?
Anything that surprised you?
No. I mean, I anticipated people coming forward and talking about stuff. I think, well, I guess, yeah, I was surprised at how quickly people adapted to it and, you know, and jumped into it. So, and, you know, like I said, that phone call from Staff Sergeant who's duty at 2nd OAR to, you know, talking to Rodney about it, you know, and you know, then the other Marine, I won't mention his name, but, you know, and then him circling his buddies around and then talking about it with them, you know, and how receptive I think people were, or immediately, you know, how they realized this, yeah, this is what we need to do. This is it. Whereas Marines Marines are skeptical by nature. I mean, they don't jump in feet first. They got to try it out. They got to figure this out. They got to, you know, there's not a lot of things. I mean, shit, even when we give them guns that are new, they're skeptical. So, yeah, that kind of stuff.
Josh, anything surprise you?
The risk of being the founding member of the General Furness fan club, the general vibe, the general way things work, and I have a chance to talk to a lot of different audiences, is somebody senior gets up and they say, well, everybody knows we've got this problem, and, you know, with mental health and suicide, so, you know, we've been looking for different people, and so we brought in these people to talk. And that's it. No context, no clear understanding of what we're doing, why it matters, how it integrates. But it's that kind of, like, intro. It's flat, it's uninformed. And then, like, that wasn't the case. And obviously it was a reflection. I didn't know all the history of how much you had talked and worked with him about it. But that to me was like, wow, you know, this they can't see this as external to who they are. It feels like it's this internal component from their leadership that deeply believes in it. And then obviously the fact that he sat through every one of those things was like mind blowing. But that's like, that we didn't feel like an external entity coming in, some check the box thing, or, you know, and that, because I didn't know what to expect, to be honest. I mean, we talked about it, but there's no way, if you asked me to reflect on how it would have affected the people we talked to, how it affected me, all of the things I learned, it never would have accounted for that. So that was all surprising. But the extent to which it was seen and positioned as a core aspect of how things have to be moving forward, and how it was embedded, was the biggest surprise to me.
I was most surprised. Well, I was most curious, you know, because when you do this show, and the content for, except for Josh's stuff, but the content, you know, we talk about, Mike and I'll talk about, guests come on and talk about as they tell their stories, and they tend to be recurring themes on this show anyway. And so, and the demographics of this show are older, okay? And I would say starting late 20s and then going north of that. So I was most curious about young Marines. Did it make sense to them? And you know what makes sense to them? Pain. Pain and trauma make sense to them. And since we've been sitting here, I just got an email from somebody who said essentially, I lived a horrible childhood, and I listened to you guys, and it made me feel so good about myself. It made me feel so good about the future, and I can't ever envision myself going back there. because of the things you guys said. I mean, so that's powerful stuff. But so my biggest question mark going in was, what would younger Marines see and say about it? And, you know, and as Mike already alluded to it, but the Marine that walked up to us at dinner and introduced himself, the three of us are sitting there, who comes over all by himself and says, gentlemen, I just want to thank you. And, you know, he talked about it. And he's the one, as Mike said, that, you know, we went back to our barracks and as a group, and we sat down and talked about it. And, you know, they were going to do something to help a friend. And you're thinking, holy shit, that's a good sign. And so to me, that's what I was most concerned about. Would it translate? And I will say this. I mean, that saying, it lands with a thud and it needs no salesman. If I recall, that came out of me listening to Jack Riley talk about coming home, finding out he was on an Agent Orange database, you know, years later, getting another call saying you're also on the Camp Lejeune Water database, and listening to him talk about what he did for his fellow Marines, the unions he organized when he would write states to get their phone books on DOS floppy disks, and he would go through looking for his Marines, and that's how he organized that's how they found guys, and I just remember thinking, you know what, you listen to that stuff, and you know it lands with a thud and needs no salesman. And so to me, it's the same when you talk about trauma and pain with young people. They've gone through it, and if you And I thought General Furness was great with this. When you extend yourself and you tell your story and they know that you're a broken toy too, that breaks down the barrier to coming up. And then all you have to do is when they start to look at you, you say, hey, what's up? And they come over and they unload on you. So that's what I was most curious about, because I thought it would resonate with more senior Marines and leaders in the Marine Corps.
And if I could add one thing, I think, like, you know, occasionally, you know, we had one kid come up to Gunner and I in the world's loudest freaking restaurant. We went to go to dinner. It was like 9:30 at night. All we wanted was peace and quiet, and they were having a Carolina Hurricane party, and the PA, it's like the loudest thing in the world. I just wanted some peace and quiet, for God's sake. But in any case, the kid comes up and he says something to the effect of, you know, thank you so much. That was really great. You know, I didn't need it, but I know some of the dudes who do. And I'm like, no, the whole point is, if you get left of this stuff, if you're not in crisis, if you're not struggling with all this stuff, and the cool part of the talk is, you know, no matter where you are on the spectrum of the continuum and stuff, you're good to go. But the whole principle is, if you can plant seeds and shape the mental environment of these young men and women, then you give them the greatest chance possible to handle this stuff with the least possible impact or ramifications on their life, and certainly well away from the fatal stuff and the real dangerous toxic stuff, or even the career-ending stuff to get them booted out. So I thought, like, when he said that, I was like, well, yeah, I mean, it's probably not being fully truthful if he thinks about it, but more importantly, that's the point. And if all you see it is as something to use to help other people, then that was the premise, right? The premise was, when someone comes up and talks to you, what we're taught to do is say, oh, I'm not equipped to handle that. You should go talk to a professional. And their response is like, but wait, you're telling me I need to talk to someone, but I am. I'm talking to you. And now you're telling me that I'm so jacked up, I got to go talk to someone who's not part of my culture, who doesn't have my experience and my shirt, doesn't have shared experience, and who I don't trust. And so the whole idea of it, all he felt like is he was better equipped to have those conversations and keep them in-house, then we succeeded like a million times over, and knowing that we've planted lots of other seeds. But it's, you know, super cool to me that we hear that, because that's the point. It's like, get to people who don't feel like they're dealing with this, and you're like, awesome. And then when they encounter it, they'll be able to pull up the site. And, you know, like you said, you didn't ram it down their throat. You said, you know, have this on your phone, don't look at it, and then at some point you'll know when to, and just like that staff duty, the duty NCO, he knew he actually had somewhere to go. He wasn't at a loss, and that's beautiful.
Another email. You all sound so upbeat and positive about this. was there any negatives associated with it? Yeah, I have one. Somebody sent me a text message through the Allmarine radio cell phone saying, "Don't you guys remember what it's like to sit through these PMEs? Your message is pretty solid." And then he sent me the link to a video that talks about converting from Judaism to Christianity. Could you give this to the indoor Jew?
Come on.
I swear to God. I think that was the only negative other than the gas cap. I described some things in life as good on top of 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 good. And I would describe I think Mike said it on so many different levels, though, not just on one level. It was, I mean, after we did the spouse thing on Thursday night, we stayed there for what, 45 minutes after that, talking with them, because it's not like we like corralled them and like stood in front of the door and said you can't leave, you know, so no. Any disappointments?
Yeah,
Mike, Mike Gunner? Any disappointments?
No. I mean, the whole trip was fine.
Josh?
Yeah.
What? It's not, no. The short answer is no. So after we got done with the morning presentation on day 5, so Friday, I had to run over to the travel office with the captain who was, like, helping us, and sign paperwork. So I hustle over there, of course, like everything's not where it's supposed to be, blah, blah, blah. He keeps his composure, but he's fairly unhappy. I sign the thing. I come back, have like 3 minutes, come over, get introduced to the 3-star, talk to him. You know, and it was a little frantic and stuff. And so I waited for you to get to the point where you do the agenda so that when you say, like, Dr. Goldberg, and I'm sitting there so they know, like, it's 3 of us. Right. And then I go off stage, and I crouch next to where Furness is with Hedlund. And I start eating my lunch, and just like a bag of almonds. And he looks at me, and he starts laughing, and he goes, "We've something like we kicked your ass this week, didn't we?" And I said, "Yeah, it's true Marine training." And it just made me laugh that, like, you know, he saw me, and he pointed at the 3-star, looked over at me eating out of this like grocery bag, and it wasn't a disappointment. It was the exact opposite. It just made me have a huge smile on my face of like, you know, this qualifies as like hardship. You know, that I'm trying to have a snack before I go and have to do my thing. And, but it was, all of it was just, you know, just, it felt like, surreal in respect to, you know, yeah, we didn't get a lot of sleep and all the rest of it, but it was like, when we would go back, we would say something like, "Okay, guys, let's just hit it for 30 minutes and then get to bed." And we couldn't stop amongst ourselves when we turned off the recorders. We couldn't stop talking about stuff. And it was so infectious and so contagious that it was like, you know, like being like, I don't want to sound like a stupid analogy, get like harassed, but you know, like if you're at a slumber party, it's like you don't want to go to sleep because you want to keep talking about it because you want to keep hanging out. And it was like, you didn't want it to end. And that's why I was like smiling on the way home. And I was like, oh, you know, it's sad to have to break up the band. And I was like, when do we get to do this again?
The, here's an email. This is from, Libby. On Saturday, Luke and Emma, who you hear, Luke, a Lance Corporal in Fallujah in 2006, and we told his story, Libby's mom, who predicted a tsunami, so we'll see if that happens. Libby wrote this. Well, first, let me tell you, at the wedding, when the groom dances with his mother, they dance to Florida's Welcome to My House.
Wow.
I said, get out of town. She said, no, it's our song. And so let me tell you, I mean, what a cool thing, you know, that our experiences, Mike and I and everybody else who's contributed to Allmarine Radio could, you know, there's the tangible evidence for a guy like Luke that he's getting married and his life is pointing in a great direction. He's dancing with his mom and he's dancing to Welcome to Our House or My House. And so that was cool. But her email says this. It's entitled Families. I love that spouses were involved. They will pass this relief on to their parents who worry about the relationship between their sons and their wives. Believe me, families will be affected. Yeah, I'll tell you who was pretty adamant about this whole thing was General Furness's wife, Linda.
Oh yeah.
And she was saying this needs to be at, what's it called, Mike? The EOS, Executive Officer?
Yeah, the Executive Officers Symposium.
Symposium, which is all the general officers and whatnot. And I think they say executive because civilian, you know, civilians that work for the Marine Corps that are very senior, they come
SCS.
To.
SCS.
Right, right, right. So she said, no, they need to see this. They need to see this. And the other thing she was funny about was that she said, he's changing. And he was like, stop, please, don't do this to me. And she said, this has been a very good week for him. And you could tell how proud she was, him telling that story. And the courage that that took to tell the story about their daughter. And I'll tell you what, if you see their daughter, she is a beautiful girl with a radiant smile. And it was very cool. The
Hey Max.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just gonna so I was telling you on the way home when I was driving, I talked to my parents, I was talking to this girl who's a friend of mine, another person, and you know, it starts with like, oh, you know, what were you doing, what did you talk about? And then all of a sudden, you know, first of all, like you and God are like playing in my head. Like literally I'm like close my eyes and I'd be like, oh, this is exactly what Max said about, and I talked to Ken about, you know, drugs and alcohol, and it's like I can go through almost word for word. But it was fascinating because, you know, and I did. I texted you and I said, hey, you're interested in doing this beyond the Marine Corps. And you're like, absolutely. It resonates and it creates such a fascinating conversation for people when they feel like they're in an environment that's going to treat their experiences well. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm talking to my mom about her upbringing and experiences and something that's like crazy. The door that opens and the depth of conversation and connection that you create when you talk about this stuff. I think it's unique to this stuff being the hard stuff, the trauma stuff, the mental health stuff. So it was amazing because I was like, you know, talking to Ken about it, and I was like, oh, and then they said this, and then Gunner talked about keep your honor clean, and then he started talking about something, and I'm like, holy cow. Like this, it's amazing. It's just so cool how the effect it has on everybody.
You know, and again, I think one of the conversations Dave and I had, No, it wasn't Dave and I. It was the CO2A. And he said, look, and I want to get both of your guys' thoughts on this. That triangular evaluation, right, your mind, your body, and then where you are financially, and then where you are spiritually, not necessarily religious spiritually, but where your spirit is. And Josh can elaborate on that if he wants to. But that's a tool, just like the commandments are, right? The goals and the commandments. And all of a sudden you see people reaching for these tools and they make sense to them. And that's cool because it doesn't always happen like that. And he was talking about how important that was. He said, because look, Mac, what you talk about is making better people. On a monthly basis, we're not going to sit down and talk about just you as a Marine. That'll be part of it. And then he said, then what we'll do is we'll just transition. And said, let's look, last month, you know, you were here, here, and here. You set these goals for yourself. How'd we do? And he said, look, you make better people. You make better Marine Corps, right? You make a better battalion. He said, so for me, these are awesome tools that are tangible that people, you know, will get excited about. And I just, Josh, you have to be extremely excited that those tools that are in Chapter 5 are now going to get, like, life, and they're going to get proofed in a big way by a military organization.
It boggled my mind when he said that, and I was, like, texting with Ken, and then we sent out a note to our board, because Ken was doing, he was briefing 1,200 CBs last week. There's like over 10,000 people that we reached, and when he said that, and then I was like, oh, we need to build a website, people should be able to go on and then rate themselves, and then set goals, and then they can look back and see, you know, 6 months ago, what was it like? And I'm like, oh, you know, like, well, you know, and obviously we're busy. We got a lot of stuff going on. I was like, oh, we're doing some project with Carnegie Mellon, their human-computer interaction. I'm like, maybe we can get them to build it because, you know, how do we make this as easy and embedded as possible? But yeah, like, beyond mind-blowing. And I think, you know, when you're in your environment, it's easy to, you know, you're just part of it, right? You don't think, and then you get outside of it. And it's to your point, Mac, and it's, you know, I had a few issues where, like, don't ever tell me that you're not worried about how much time I take. Just take whatever time I want. Like, nothing good happens after that. You kept saying, you know, like, the key to this isn't to present a problem. It's being able to operationalize it. And, you know, my understanding, even as I thought about, okay, this is what I would do at this time and how do I continue to focus, it's like, to me, of course, because that's just part of what we've done here. But when you get outside of it, you're like, God, you know, that's what people are yearning for. I know where I want to be, but how do I get from here, which is not a good place, to there? And that's obviously what we spend all our time doing. So that insight from, like, almost the external feedback was validating, and the fact that it's going to get embedded in there, and that Fernette sees it accurately. And that's my frustration. And my frustration is that we have somehow made readiness and wellness on polar opposites of some spectrum. And it's ridiculous and it's absurd. And what's true is that the more well you are, the more ready you are. The stronger you are in mind, in body, in your finances, in your family, and so forth, the better of a soldier, sailor, airman, marine you're going to be. And we haven't done that, and it feels like an adjunct. And the more we can integrate those two things, which clearly for us understand, the better the marine they are, but more importantly, the better human being they are. And that's why it was so cool to me to see that understanding that you know, wellness and readiness are not separate items there. And wellness isn't a luxury, it's a necessity.
Mike, thoughts?
Well, I mean, we're just reiterating the same point over and over. I mean, we all mutually agree. I mean, this is like the base of the pyramid. I mean, everything we did was, you know, there's so much more you can do with it. And as we continue to go, I'm sure a lot of things will change.
All right. The, let's see, how much time? All right. We've been here about an hour. What's next for you, Josh?
What's next for me? Well, I've already redone my outline for the presentation and continue to work on that. And so I'm hopeful, you know, that we can take this on the road because we've, with the Navy and National Guard, some other groups beyond the Marine Corps, is one part of it. You know, for us, there's really three types of training that we're focused on. One is this, what we would call struggle well, which is the stuff that I contributed last week, which is, that's for everybody. Mm-hmm. And the second is path training. So what we're working on now is to expand the number of places where we do our, you know, intensive and immersive program for people who are really struggling, females and males. And so we're going to start working with a group in Florida shortly to expand there. And then, so basically there's going to be more availability of the programming we've created in multiple jurisdictions over the course of the next 5 years is the plan. So we're starting that. So I got to build more train-the-trainer stuff. And the other part of that is we're going to launch our app, which is called My Path. And, you know, interestingly, some of the stuff I'm talking about with the wellness triangle and those things, the content around that, expanded content, third-party content, could get interesting over time where that fits in. But I'm working on, so the app, a learning management system to train the trainer, the path. And then the last part is what we call PTG training. And that's how do we shift the mindset of the mental health community? Because, you know, what's true, and that rabbi video that I'm hoping everyone is listening has now listened to or watched, is this notion that our system, as a mental health system, is designed to manage and mitigate symptoms and distress, not to help you grow and win. And that's the fault for that lies on both sides of the aisle. It lies on the client, and it lies on the provider. But what we need to do is to educate people about the possibility of growth, and in our language, winning, after trauma, because that's not a core belief of the mental health system. And so being able to train mental health professionals, so if people take our advice and go in and say, hey, I'm not here to just sit on the couch and talk about my bad stuff for 45 minutes. I'm here because I need your help to be able to live the life that I want to live. And that's what that looks like is this. And so they can answer that question and say, awesome, I can help you do that. But if they say, well, no, I'm sorry, that's not possible for you. We're going to give you medicine and therapy, and you're going to get stuck where you're at. So just get used to that, because that life you're having, that doesn't exist for you anymore. That's off limits to you because of what you've been through. We needed to train them to open their aperture to realize that trauma is not diminishing. It's inevitable, and it has value, and you can grow and win because of it, not in spite of it. So those are the three things we're working on. So as you can tell, I'm busy, but the amount of energy and excitement and enthusiasm and passion I have and I take from last week is outrageous. Like, I feel like I could work nonstop for the next year and you know, with enthusiasm. So, and it's cool, right? Because we're trying to hit all parts of the continuum of self-aid, buddy aid, corpsman, medic officer. All of them that I just described are all in those four areas. So it's about that continuum that you so eloquently articulated.
I like that, when I eloquently articulate. This is not for the military either. This is for anybody. So if you have a group, this is not military-centric stuff. We draw examples from the military, but anybody would understand what we're talking about. Mike, you're getting your nose operated on. Are you fired up for that?
I don't know if it's going to happen.
What? What happened?
Yeah, of course. Insurance. Something happened with the insurance. Something I felt through. So I don't know. I'm not planning on it now. So
right.
It's like, whatever. No
right.
big deal.
All right. Well,
I know.
You were kind of fired up to have your nose, your septum undeviated.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. I can wrap around it.
Got it. Well, how do they not? Never mind.
Yeah, it's medical insurance, man.
Right. What
Who knows?
Anything else going on this week?
Yeah. Well, you know, we talk a lot. We've mentioned a lot about the Granbury Marine Corps Junior RTC rifle program. And Calissa Leyland, Philip Becker, and Mackenzie Sheffield, all Granbury High School seniors, just made the U.S. Olympic Junior Olympic team.
Wow, that's awesome.
So they're going to be in Colorado Springs training for the Olympics.
Wow. What a great experience. I mean, how cool is
that?
Yeah,
when you learn their stories.
Right. How cool is that program opens that door to an Olympic training venue, and then everybody you meet through that.
Oh.
And all the
life-changing.
Right. All the possibilities that can come from that.
And this, you know, but you know, and we're not going to go into detail about it, but you know the stories of these kids. They don't come from a lot of opportunity. You know, they had to fight their way to get to this point, and it just makes that story much better. I mean, it's amazing. My hat's off to the two girls and Philip. And then Sunday I was down at Leander. With one of my best buddies, Mark LaRue, who runs LaRue Tactical down there, and his youngest daughter, Sage. We were down there, seeing her off to boot camp. So she just flew out to Parris Island today. So where her transformation starts, she was so excited. She's trying to hide it, trying to act tough. you know, it's just so funny, man, when you deal with kids like that. You're like, yeah, all right.
My cousin's son is at OCS, and I talked to her last night. And my cousin, she's like a sister to me. My cousin Tom is like a brother to me. And I had forwarded Tom a couple things because he listens, and he forwarded to her. And she said something that Joe Garreau told me. She said, Michael, you're doing the Lord's work. I said, I don't know that I'm really doing that. It's flattering that you would say that. And then she started asking questions about her son at OCS. And I said, he's fine. We had an interesting conversation about, he's, you know, her other son's a police officer in Sacramento, California. I said, yeah, you know, John's fine. It's Alex you got to worry about. And she said, I know. And Mike, did you see the story of some guy walked up and shot a police officer in the back of the head in Davis, California?
Yeah.
He was hearing voices.
Yeah.
And there was a car accident. She responded to it, and he walks up and shoots her and kills her. Like, are you kidding me? What in God's name? So anyway, so I had a fun conversation with her, but
and then we had a police officer here in Fort Worth take his life this weekend.
Yes.
Yeah. So
you're going to that funeral? Yes or no?
No, I just couldn't make it happen. So.
All right. All right. Well, first of all, boys, thanks for doing this morning, and we will begin the. Putting dates and stuff and see when the next time we do it. But it was a great week, and I just want to thank you both. Josh, it was awesome to meet you and work with you and get smarter because of you. So thank you very much. And Mike, always awesome when we get to hang out. So so it was just a great week. Thank you both very much.
All right.
All right. See you
thank
later.
You. This is a joy. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. There you have it from Texas and Virginia, Mike Musselman and Josh Goldberg. That, my friends, is going to do it. So thank you very much for listening today, and we will be back tomorrow. I'm not exactly sure what we're doing tomorrow, to tell you the truth. Thanks to everybody who helped on our trip. It was awesome. I guess, but most, General Furness, his leadership, his insistence that we come, and then his commitment to doing it and making it special, you know, made it great. So that'll do it. Don't touch that dial. This thing obviously repeats itself momentarily. And what you'll hear is you'll hear me open the program and talk a little bit. And then General David J. Furness, United States Marine Corps, Commanding General of the 2nd Marine Division, he'll give you his thoughts on this thing that has been so long in the making here on All Marine Radio. And really, it's the first time it's ever been trotted out. So, so a huge thanks to him. So, have a great day on a Monday. All Marine Radio, over and out.